All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Fighter's Block. My name is Joe Gilpin, joined as always by my co-host, the king of Salvadorian strong style, Mr. Jesse Rivas. How you doing this week, Jesse?
I feel spoiled. I feel spoiled because we had phenomenal boxing. We had phenomenal MMA. Wow, what an amazing card from the UFC. And even the undercard of the Canelo fight was still pretty much entertaining as well.
It was a lot of good stuff last night. So we're coming off of the BMF night, the big night for the UFC. Trump was in attendance. And in the main event for the UFC, I consider it the main event for the night because the Canelo fight waited. Right? Yes. So we got to talk about the BMF first. Jorge Masvidal whoops Nate Diaz, picks up a TKO win after the doctor stops it after the third for cuts. Nate looks like he got bit by a fucking shark. And Jorge Masvidal is the BMF of 170.
So it was a fantastic fight that showed us exactly where Jorge Masvidal is at the current stage when it comes to 170. We had just seen Nate Diaz come off a phenomenal victory over former champion Anthony Pettis. It was a great performance.
Who's still exactly as good as he was when he was champion, Anthony Pettis.
And we saw him come back. Everyone was excited about, oh, Nate looks fantastic. It looks like the three-year layoff didn't affect him at all. Then he goes in there with a guy who fights three times a year. A guy who's super active, who's constantly evolving, who's one of the top at 170, Jorge Masvidal, and it showed speed, timing, strength, in every aspect besides grappling. I would even say grappling. His ground and pound was very effective in that fight.
Yeah, he passed the guard a couple of times. I think the number one thing that impressed me about Jorge Masvidal's performance was the power that he brought to a lot of those combinations, because he was always a volume striker at 155. He's matured into this power striker at 170 that really has the ability to put people out, obviously. Like, he's won his last three fights by stoppage. And this was super impressive by Jorge Masvidal. I knew he would have the speed advantage. I expected that. He looked great in the clinch. He looked great on the ground. He obviously looked amazing with those overhands. And he whooped Nate Diaz's ass.
Now,
Nate's mad.
Yes.
Who's
mad? Nate usually turns up in the fourth and fifth round. Do you think that this is something that they were planning for, maybe holding on to the later rounds to really explode?
No, I don't think it was a game plan. Nobody has a game plan to get their ass whooped for the first couple rounds. A game plan would be, how do you slow him down and then take advantage later, not let him punch you a million times, let him head kick you and knock you down, let him ground and pound you with elbows until your eye has fallen out of the fucking socket.
That's how you wear them down. You make sure they use a lot of energy first. You make sure they're tired.
No, Nate just is always around, so he's always dangerous like that. But he still lost that third round. It's not like he was, turning it around or doing way better. It was just like, maybe over time something will happen.
Now, what do you think of the doctor stoppage? Because I wasn't super against it.
Man, we've seen three guys die in boxing this year. I'm not going to get mad if the doctor steps in anymore. I mean? If the doctor honestly looks at it, he doesn't want to stop it. He's fucking, the president's there. You think this guy is super excited to stop the fight? No. Did you see the photo Dana White put up this morning? He had to get fucking 30 stitches in his face, man. Right around his eye socket, right over the eye. He was wiping his eyes constantly in the fight. Clearly it was fucking with his vision. If a corner wants to throw a towel or if a doctor wants to stop a fight, I'm not going to get in their way.
I considered it. I looked at the different scenarios. What are the odds of Nate Diaz winning this fight?
What do you mean? From that third round on? Oh, 4%, 5%.
What are the odds of him getting serious damage within the next two rounds?
Probably around that same thing, if not way higher, right? Yeah. At least that high.
Because you didn't see Masvidal slowing down. You saw him ready to destroy. He was bouncing around. He was having a great time. You saw Nate Diaz bleeding.
You saw the cuts getting bigger.
Yes.
I mean, people are like, oh, well, he had the cut, and then they stopped it, after two more rounds. He kept punching him in it. It was getting larger. And people are, I'm hearing the argument about, well, the Tyson Fury fight. They didn't stop the Tyson Fury fight. It's like, well, they should have.
Yes.
That's not an argument. They should have stopped that one, too.
Do you remember that really awkward fight with Arthur Abraham in Germany where he got his jaw broken?
Yeah.
They really should have stopped it. They honestly should have stopped that fight. But they kept it going just because he was going to win a decision.
Yes,
which
I mean,
is still a controversial decision, too.
He had broken fucking jaw. There's a ton of examples of worse cuts that were allowed to go on. That doesn't mean that that is the right thing to do. You know, the Diaz brothers themselves are great examples. They had these giant gashes on their fucking eyebrows. They fought through it. They got way worse in those fights. This is Nick as well. And now they have scar tissue that opens up every time they head in there. Maybe these cuts should have been taken more seriously earlier in their career so they would have longevity down the stretch right now. And it wouldn't be a giant fucking issue affecting him in the biggest fight of his life.
No.
Not the biggest fight of his life, actually. He fought Connor. That was
bigger. I don't know. This is a huge fight. Think about the impact. You had the president of the United States of America, the most powerful country in the world, in attendance. You had The Rock, who's like the highest paid superstar in Hollywood, literally crowning the champion. You had the highest paid athlete in the world, Saul Canelo Alvarez, deciding that he was going to not fight until after.
I don't think he made that decision.
Well, his team, very important.
I think DAZN made that decision.
Very intelligent, very powerful, very seasoned veterans in the fight sport said, man, we can't compete with this main event. And this is...
They showed it at the MGM. Up on the big screen. They called up Dana White and they asked, you know, our guys are going crazy. You know, our audience is going crazy. They're pulling their hair out. Can we show your fight up on the big screen? What a moment that has to be.
Yeah.
To get boxing to come in and, like, we need to show your fight to keep people interested. Holy shit. Can you even imagine, like, the fucking, like, hard-on Dana had after that?
Obviously, they had to. I mean, remember, like...
The president's right next to him. Boxing is calling him up, telling him that they need to his entertainment value. I mean, holy shit.
Why did DAZN think about that before? Because the Ryan Garcia fight finished, and they still had two more fights before...
I think they expected Ryan to go longer. Right? I mean, nobody expected a first-round knockout from Ryan Garcia. I didn't see that predicted anywhere.
No. People thought...
You know, maybe he'll pick up a later TKO, or, like, maybe, you know, we'll get a decision. People had him losing. It was supposed to be, you know, a really difficult test. He picked up a knockout.
Some people viewed it as a punishment fight.
But anyway, for the BMF title, looking forward, what does BMF mean? Is this going to be a thing where he gets plugged into... another exciting guy versus exciting guy kind of thing, another gangster on gangster fight? Is he going to a title shot? What does this really mean?
I think this is a great launching pad for fighters that...
he's the breakout star of the year.
Yeah. I mean, for example, Masvidal has looked fantastic lately. This kind of cements him and gives him an opportunity to shine a little bit, even though he's not the champion. Same thing if Tony Ferguson had a BMF title. Like, if he were to fight Tony Ferguson, that'd be amazing. Justin Gaethje would be great. The winner of Conor versus Donald Cerrone on January 18th would be fantastic.
I'm into a lot of this. It should almost be like a Money in the Bank thing where he can like cash it in for a title shot if he wants to. You know what I mean?
I think it'd be cool if they did that. Actually,
put like a little stakes on it, right? Give me a little sizzle with the stakes. So right now, Jorge is ranked third behind Colby, Tyron Woodley, and Kamaru Usman. So I guess technically fourth. Tyron's kind of doing his own separate thing. I think Jorge has to get a title shot after this.
Yeah.
Right? Also, why would you not? He's the biggest fucking star you have right now in that division. Obviously, you should give him a title shot if he's anywhere close, right?
And it happens so organically as well. Think about it. Both of these guys, if you had told me a year and a half ago that they were going to be fighting in the biggest card in the UFC, the biggest main event in the UFC of 2019, I wouldn't have believed you.
Well, the UFC did something very important. They tapped into that, like, Sons of Anarchy, Joker tattoo-style dumb guy who thinks he's way tougher than he is. And then they found two fighters who both seem way tougher than they are and then had them fight, and then a fake tough guy put the belt around the waist. I mean, it was really perfect all the way around.
It was hilarious.
It was a giant metaphor for fake pussies.
It was funny because we actually saw... we were actually at a bar that showed both the Canelo fight and they both showed the UFC. And I pointed this out that when the UFC was on, the people who were watching are wearing cashmere sweaters. They had nice leather, like... They had Chelsea boots. They had on nice watches. People were well-dressed people. Then, as soon as the UFC was over and boxing started, all those people got up and left. The only people remaining was Latinos with face tattoos and very controversial colors.
I saw, so I didn't notice that, but even during the Diaz-Masvidal fight, I saw a lot of, like, I saw a lot of unsavory types that were rooting for, like, Nate, especially. Well, Nate pulled in that gangster crowd a little bit more than Jorge does.
I feel like because they were probably there to see Canelo.
Oh, maybe.
And Nate Diaz is Mexican.
It kind of rolls against that, like, old boxing head argument about, like, this is the, you know, the sweet science. This is the sport of kings. This is, you know, not really anymore, man. You know, find me an educated person super into boxing. Hell, I'm into boxing. I'm basically illiterate.
But, I mean, it was, it, you know, when you talked about who, like, the real gangsters champion was, it was Canelo. It was Canelo at the end of the night.
So, moving on, I don't think we're going to see Nate again.
No.
I think there's a chance this is it, right? Because he doesn't need to fight, you know, the commission fucked him twice in a week. So he's going to, you know, use that as like, I'm just too real for everybody. I'm not getting head kicked anymore.
Did you see whatever. They found out what the trace supplements were in his whole food vitamins?
No, what were they?
Oh, that's what it was. But he apparently, like, his levels were really low. But apparently what it is like the new testing is super sensitive, so it catches even like the smallest amounts.
Man, who cares? we talked about it a little bit already. Let's talk about the boxing, man. Let's talk about Canelo. So Canelo was in a dogfight.
Yes.
But I don't know if that's what history is going to say.
No.
You know?
This was one of the funniest commentaries I've ever heard in my entire life.
This was bad. This was really bad, right?
It had never. So you get Sergey Kovalev, a fighter who's coming from a different promotion. He's coming from Main Events, who fights on ESPN, who they worked out this deal for him to fight in the zone against their number one star, the guy who basically is the franchise. It's him and Anthony Joshua, the franchise of this whole experiment, which is the zone.
You might remember Anthony Joshua from getting knocked out by a human chalupa.
And that's the thing, they were promoting Joshua as the main star, but then he got knocked out, and they signed Canelo to this mega deal, so they can't afford both of them losing. I think it would literally make the zone go under.
I agree, yeah. No, it would completely fuck the zone. Absolutely. Their negotiating power in the market would be so much less if both those guys went, you know, belly up. But
then you have Golden Boy running the whole promotion, so literally every commentator's rooting for Canelo. Even when Canelo's losing, they're like, this is phenomenal strategy. He's being very patient. This is very Floyd Mayweather-esque. You remember how Floyd Mayweather used to give up the early rounds against Zab Judah and against Jose Luis Castillo just to come back and win at the end? Canelo's brilliant. Some of these rounds are more... If you go back and look at some of these rounds, they're a lot closer than people think. You may be giving them to Kovalev, but if you look, you have to count the punches that land cleanly and the more effective punches. And you got to say that Canelo won some of those. These judges are very reputable, by the way.
Yeah, it was... It was unbelievable. Everybody was sitting there just like waiting for it, ramping up. And the scorecards reflected that. The scorecards had Canelo ahead at the time of the stoppage.
Which is ridiculous.
I had it 7-3, I think. So it was somewhere in that range. 6-3, I think, for Kovalev. I had it 97-93 Kovalev at the time of the knockout.
I had it.
You were right around there, right?
I was right around there as well. I thought Canelo Alvarez was losing. You saw where the momentum was going. But there was always like this like... certain confidence, a certain weirdness about Kovalev felt like he was expecting something, and Canelo felt like he was about to deliver something.
It felt like watching this decision rolling up was like watching a white woman in a movie, in a horror movie. You know what I mean? Just like, oh, this bitch is gonna die. Oh, this bitch doesn't even know she's gonna die. Don't do that. That's exactly what's gonna get you killed, bitch. He actually did get killed, bitch. Holy shit, what a fucking left hook, and followed it up with a beautiful right straight, and Canelo picks up the big knockout win to keep himself on top, to keep the controversy off, thankfully. Jesus.
What do you think was the reason that we didn't see the Crusher tonight? We saw Kovalev, but he didn't seem... This is a guy who killed a guy in the ring. This is a guy who had devastating power. I mean, think of like his previous knockouts. We didn't see him impose his size and strength in this fight.
No, but I actually think that he was fighting really smart. I think this is the Buddy McGirt influence. Mm. And I think Buddy understands something that's really important. One, Canelo's got a fucking hell of a chin. You know, Canelo never gets hurt. Ever. So if you're gonna, if your game plan revolves around rocking Canelo Alvarez, you have an issue. Two, there's a huge amount of surprise in it, obviously. Three, Kovalev can box. And if I could throw a fourth out there, a lot of fighters know this, your power's there. Whether you load up and tense your shoulders and grimace and bite down, it just throw, and whatever you land with, you land with. Just score your points. I actually thought it was a really strong performance from Kovalev through the first, like, nine or so rounds. Definitely losing some rounds in there and having some really rough moments. But I thought the game plan made sense. It was working until it didn't. Yeah. What'd you think?
I felt the whole fight, Canelo was not looking to win rounds. I felt like he was looking for an opportunity for a knockout. I felt that the moment that he said that he saw something, I was expecting him to have a TKO. I didn't expect him to box all 12 rounds. And we saw it happen. And it was even at a time period where we thought that we're going to get a robbery decision in favor of Canelo. Where would you rank Canelo given his victory in the pound-for-pound list?
Oh, boy, in the pound-for-pound list. I think I probably had him, like, fourth or fifth before this. And right now, I mean, this is a nice win. So I would still put Crawford ahead of him. I would still put Lomachenko ahead of them. So I'd probably place him around third.
I think he's a solid third.
I think he's a solid third, right?
I would even say, I don't know. Lomachenko's done some great things. He's moved up several weight classes, so you got to give him props on that. What do you put more value in? Someone jumping different weight classes, or do you put more value in someone dominating a division?
It all depends, right? It's all, no career's ever the same. You kind of know it when you see it with that kind of thing.
Because Crawford's an interesting one. His resume hasn't been the most impressive because he's on the wrong side of the fence.
But you also see it in who they are. You know what I mean? Like, I can look at Terrence Crawford, and that guy is the best boxer in the world. You know what I mean? The things he's able to do, the style he's able to master, guys that he's able to make look amateurish, that's the best boxer in the world.
Yeah.
Right? You know when you see it. I'm trying to look up a boxing pound for pound list.
But I got to say Canelo's is a solid three at this time period. If not, and I would even entertain the argument of him being number one, just based on the fact that he's dominated four divisions. We've seen people jump divisions in the lower weight classes, like featherweight through lightweight through welterweight. We've seen that. It's been very rare to see someone go from 140 to 175 and win belts in four of those weight classes. That's unheard of.
That's true. That's a great point.
Those jumps mean more at that higher weight.
You know, ironically, that does happen a little bit more in wrestling. You know what I mean? There are guys who will go, like, Kyle Dake won his first national title at 141 pounds. 4 years later, he was graduating. He was 165 pounds. He went up a weight class every year. Like, there are definitely guys in wrestling that go up those massive weight jumps a little bit more often than boxing, where I feel like a guy is, you know, a guy moves up 3 pounds and we're supposed to be like, oh my God, is it a big difference? Not really, you know? So do you think that the wait time affected either of these guys? Because these guys had to sit around for a long ass time.
Oh, absolutely. We were well past the 36-year-old Kovalev's bedtime. I thought it was a smart move. So what happened is, as soon as the Ryan Garcia co-main event was over, the UFC still had two more fights. Canelo was hyped. He was jumping up and down. He was ready. His adrenaline was on 100,000 trillion. Kovalev, they showed him. He had his gloves wrapped. He just sat on the couch and he took a nap. That was the big difference.
Yeah, but Kovalev came out with a lot of pop.
Yeah.
And Canelo didn't. And I think that the wait time is why. I think Canelo really didn't get going until like the fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
You know, those first three rounds, he was still so asleep.
Which was Nate Diaz's strategy.
Yeah. Yeah, Nate's strategy usually involves giving up the first three rounds. Unfortunately, he's only in 5-round fights. So might be a little retarded. Let's talk about the boxing co-main event. Ryan Garcia comes out. Canelo, where does he go from here?
Canelo, man, the options are out there.
Probably 168, right?
I've heard talks of him fighting at 168 against Callum Smith. They're both on the zone. That'd be a phenomenal fight. I've heard rumors of him fighting Billy Joe Saunders, also on the zone. Billy Joe Saunders now has a belt at 168.
Let's do that. That would be the best, right?
I think that'd be the best one because they're both middleweights that are moving up.
Yeah.
It looks like 160 is not going to happen for Canelo anymore. Like, he just put on too much to go back down that much. And
he looked good against Jacobs, though.
Yeah, he looked great against Jacobs.
We'll see what it is.
But we'll see what it is. But
Canelo does Canelo. Like, we never would have predicted he would come and fight Kovalev, right? Yeah. So, man, does he... Is 175 has got to be the limit, right? He cannot go higher than 175.
He did say in the post-fight conference that he is now more open to fight Triple G, but Triple G has to come up to him.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Boxing co-main event. Ryan Garcia probably puts on his best performance to date, I would say. Blast through Deneau with a first-round knockout. You were coming in your pants. Tell me about it.
I thought it was a phenomenal performance. So going into this fight, they even had a face-off. This is a guy who's only had one previous loss. He's a phenomenal prospect. He's a very skilled boxer out of the wild card gym. Trains with Devin Haney, who is the amateur rival of Ryan Garcia. A lot of people thought this was a punishment fight, and a lot of people thought that this was going to expose Ryan Garcia. There's a lot of things...
I thought it would be a much tougher fight.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that do...
Who didn't?
Yeah. We thought at least it would be a close fight.
Yeah.
But immediately, from the get, you saw Ryan Garcia with phenomenal confidence, phenomenal speed, and phenomenal power, and ends up stopping Dunio in the first round, which no one has ever done, obviously. I mean, the guy's only lost one time before, and it was not getting destroyed like that. Where do you think Ryan goes from here?
Ryan's been asking for big fights, and when you knock out a guy like Dunio in the first round, you get him. I think he deserves a big fight now. I still think it might be a little too early for him to get a big fight, and his management might try to, like, hold him, like, one or two more, maybe, until he, like, really is fighting the elite of the elite. But he's put himself into that mix where no more bellhops. You know, you're going to have to fight real guys now. And that's a good thing for his career, I think.
I would like him to eventually fight fellow prospect Virgil Ortiz, who fights at 147, who he was annoyed that Golden Boy called him the number one prospect in the world, because he is.
Ryan, he was in 2017.
Yeah, but Virgil Ortiz is definitely, like, that guy.
Yeah.
If you don't know who Virgil Ortiz is, look that guy up. He is the future of boxing.
He's really good.
Devin Haney, another guy who all called the future of boxing. He was jealous of him.
Man, I would love to see him and Haney.
Yeah.
If I could get any... Yeah, if he's not going to get pushed to the moon with, like, a Linares type of thing, then I think, like, yeah, Devin Haney is the guy.
And then, of course...
That's almost a very UFC move. You know what I mean? Where it's like, we know these guys are going to be big stars, but let's have them face off right now anyway.
They do that in the UK a lot.
They'll do more in the UK.
Like, Dillian White and Joshua were having big fights against each other
before they were big. Yes, I almost feel like that was, like, personal beef. You know,
Rose
what I mean?
Versus the Gale before they were big.
That's true. That's a good point.
America doesn't really do that, but I think it would be...
America doesn't have enough stars to do that. When do we have two guys that were like, these are the guys, you know?
Yeah. And then he also, Teofimo Lopez, who, even though he's about their age, he's about like 21 years old or 20 years old, he's still in their age bracket, but he's not, I wouldn't call him a prospect anymore.
No, he's more established. He's like half a step ahead of them, right?
Yeah, but he's also part of that group that he was kind of jealous of, and like now I think he's really put himself on that level with those guys.
I agree. Let's see him.
Except for Teofimo Lopez. He's not there yet.
There's a strong underclass. Let's have them all fuck each other up.
It's a tough weight class. I mean, Gervonta Davis just moved up there.
Hand me the whiteboard while we're here, by the way. Let's see what else was going on.
Gervonta Davis just moved up there. You recently just had Anthony Crolla. Let's talk about that. Anthony Crolla's fight in the UK, his farewell fight at lightweight against a guy who only has one KO, was so big. Did you realize that Michael Buffer was there and not at the Canelo fight?
No, I didn't realize. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, he just goes where he's paid to go, right?
But still,
it's not like he has like brand loyalty.
Yeah.
But that says a lot about like the turnout for the event. Man, that's incredible. Because Crawl is not like he's got the win over Burns, but like
a couple
guys have wins over Burns at this point.
He had competitive losses against Linares, and then he got starched by Lomachenko. But from what I've read, the reason is he won their heart is because when he was at the British level, when he was like a British champion, Commonwealth champion, he was also in a reality show, like their version of The Contender. Like, he won their hearts and had a lot of Fight of the Year candidates. So they were rooting for him to be like world.
He's more like a Joe Lauzon.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
If Joe Lauzon had won a title and then lost it to like
Bisping, maybe. Or Matt Serra might be a guy.
More like a Matt Serra. Because he won a world title, but it wasn't like he won a world title. It was like, all right, you got lucky.
Yeah. Man, good for Corolla. You know, great career. Probably the win over the Burns is, you know, obviously going to be the apex. And now I hope he finds some cool shit to do. You hate to see a fighter retire and then it's like, what's next?
It's the right time. Like, I mean, with Haney, with Ryan Garcia, with all this new blood coming into the division.
True.
Richard Comey.
Yeah, a lot of guys are going to start. Yeah. Like,
I don't see him beating anyone in the top 15 at this moment, so it's the best time for him to leave.
Did you want to talk about this, why the BMF title is good for 170 thing?
Yes.
Please.
I think the BMF title is phenomenal for 170. It's a belt with no politics.
It's all
a
politics.
Belt that it puts the best against the best. It's not about who
sells. But they're not. Stephen Thompson's better than both of those guys.
It's not.
He beat Masvidal.
I mean, if you want to get technical, but it's not about.
Damian Maia just beat Jorge Masvidal, too. He's way better.
It's not about who sells the most pay per views. It's about just the best fighting the best.
But you know that's not true, right? Are we doing a bit, or do you like?
Well, think about it. There was a time period at 170 where you had.
Think Tyron about Woodley. It. One of us needs to.
Tyron Woodley had the title. Then you had an interim champ in Colby Covington. Then you had an interim champ in Usman. There's so many belts. Too many belts. What if we just had one belt?
So why introduce another belt? If there's too many, you don't add more. That's like trying to dig your way out of a hole. You don't do that.
You have one belt to crown one champion, and that's all we need.
Yeah, we have that. Kamaru. There's only one belt right now at 170 by the time they introduce this. There's only one guy with a championship belt that actually matters, and it's Kamaru's.
But see, everyone's fighting each other. Everyone's beating each other. Do you think nobody's fighting the guys who need to fight. Like, how many of them had beaten Nate Diaz? I think, like, none of them.
Nate has, like, 15 losses.
And we call all those guys champions. That's why Conor McGregor's a legend.
Nate retired for 3 years. That's why nobody has beaten him there. It's at the top. The division's constantly refreshing itself, and Nate took a pass.
That's why RDA is a champion. That's why we respected RDA so much. That's why we respected Ben Henderson. Like, unless you
RDA beat the shit out of Nate.
Unless you beat the man, you can't be the man.
Well, then Stephen Thompson is the man because he beat Masvidal.
Well, Masvidal just became the man by beating Nate Diaz. So if you want to be the man, you have to beat Masvidal now for the
BMF. So then Conor McGregor's the man.
Yeah, but Conor
McGregor makes Khabib the man.
If you want to get technical.
I mean, I don't know what the argument is. It's only a political belt. It's only a belt that, it's like how Logan Paul and KSI are fighting. That's the same reason, really, why Nate and Jorge main evented. Is because it's personalities over skill. The same reason that CM Punk got signed to the UFC and everybody crapped their pants is the same reason that these two had a fake belt being put on them by a different WWE champion. I don't think that's by mistake.
It's the people's title.
While a WWE Hall of Famer president was in attendance. Yeah, it's an only political belt. It's 100% a political belt.
I think it's a great marketing tool.
It's a great marketing tool. Yeah. I'll agree with that. It sells fights. Logan Paul versus KSI is a great marketing tool. The guys who are on the undercard of that are very smart because they're going to get a ton of exposure that they wouldn't have otherwise.
It's going to be on the zone next week. So you have David Haney against To Be Announced, and you have Billy Joe Saunders
against Who Gives a Shit, right?
Who Gives a Shit. They're just going to get exposed and get good publicity with the main event being KSI versus Logan Paul. Two YouTubers.
We don't need to break down the fight.
It's a 50-50 fight between two guys who are making their professional fight debut, but it's a rematch of their amateur fight that they had a couple months ago. How do you... All right, we won't do this.
Good, because I was just going to move on anyway. We talked all the boxing that happened. Man, let's talk the UFC co-main event.
Can we be serious, though? How weird is it the fact that is going to create a lot of revenue for DAZN?
Oh, it's a huge revenue thing for DAZN. No, it's a very smart marketing tool for them. I completely understand it.
That sold more pay-per-views.
YouTube makes a lot of money. People don't realize how much, you know, YouTube can make. The life of a YouTuber is a miserable one, and no one should want to be a YouTuber. But you can make some good coin on there.
I can't believe that they sold... Was it the highest-selling pay-per-view of last year, KSI versus Logan Paul? Or at least it was one of them.
Yeah, I'm sure it was up there. I wouldn't even know. Till fuck Gastelum. And Darren Till at 185 looks to be a problem. But Kelvin Gastelum didn't look like himself, right?
No, he didn't.
This was a very hard weight cut all the way down to 184, wasn't it? So let's start there. He does the little bullshit elbow trick. Clearly, you can take like at least like a pound off with one finger. Like if his elbow is on there, he could have gotten a lot, you know, 3, 4, 5 pounds off. 100%. Here's how you know it was bullshit. Nobody strips naked to weigh in 2 pounds under the limit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he clearly did it. And then he goes in, and man, he just has no pop all night, I felt like. And Darren Till fought a really smart fight, stayed only to his strengths, that one shot and constantly V-stepping out style that he has. Looked great.
I thought it looked great. Super boring fight. Not what I expected.
It was super boring.
It still was a close fight, though.
Well, because you kind of expected Gastelum to push it more. You know what I mean? And he just didn't. He just, you know, he was confounded by some of the things that Till was doing. He wasn't able to solve the problems.
It was a fight that Darren Till absolutely needed. He confessed in a post-fight interview about how he considered faking the injury to get out of the fight. He was like, he had that much anxiety going into the fight because so much was riding on it. This is big for the UFC because it's a big draw in the UK and they needed like a post-Bisping kind of guy. He looks great on camera. He has a great style. He's young.
He's such an asshole. Oh, I just wish he wasn't an asshole and I would be a big fan, but oh, he's such an asshole.
Where do you think he goes?
And he has such an ugly tattoo on his arm, doesn't he? The, like, the face of the girl, it's not well done. It looks like shit, Darren. Where do I think he goes from here? Man, it's an interesting question. I'd love to see him in with, you know, a real contender at 185, kind of see what we have here. Somebody who might be good is, like, a Brunson who's coming off of a nice win.
Yes.
And who's kind of a gatekeeper, let's see, you know, what this guy really has kind of guy. I think Derek Brunson might be the fight.
I think that'd be a great fight.
Also happening that night, Stephen Thompson, who we've established is the BMF of the card in reality, picked up the fight of the night victory over Vicente Luque and looked awesome. I thought he lost the first round, but he's so good. Those last two rounds, especially that third round, woo! Put him down to the sweet chin music.
Skills show over time. And that's what it looked when I saw the first round, even though he lost it. I was like, it just looks so good. Like, it's just such solid, straight, beautiful technique. The straight right was there all night. The jab was great. His kick combinations, the way he kind of flows everything together. He lost the first. He took a lot of damage. But once he started...
Luque got away from that game plan, didn't he?
Yeah.
That, like, kicking all the time, you know, to set up the shots with the hands.
I felt like there was a change in footwork that Wonderboy did that kind of took that away a bit.
Yeah, he wasn't letting himself get pushed to the cage nearly as much. In that first round, he let himself get crowded to the cage. And you could see he was using his hand to kind of grab and tell when he was up against it. He didn't have that... His footwork, for as good as it is, kind of sucks, to be honest. Like, he'll forget about it sometimes, and he'll just stay very stationary. Tyron Woodley took advantage of that a lot.
Yeah.
But he started stepping out at a really harsh angle every time he got close to the cage and not letting himself get trapped in there, and it made a huge difference in the second and third round.
I'm a big fan of Wonderboy, and I want a big step up for him after this. He's not that far away from being champion.
He's really not. He had the bad Pettis loss. That was really bad. But besides, you know, and he lost to Till. I thought he beat Till. You know, he's right there with all these guys. He had a really close fight with Tyron Woodley for the title.
He was beating Pettis before that.
Yeah, he was dominating Pettis. And then just a crazy Superman punch knockout. He's right there with any of these guys. Let's see a great fight. He doesn't have much time left. He's got to get after it.
Yeah, he's
36, 37.
Yeah, he's Kovalev's age that we're talking about, calling him an old man. He's right there. He looks younger because he has like that creepy shaved face. That
he seems Mormon. I don't think he is, but he seems it.
Yeah, I agree.
Kevin Lee picked up a huge knockout win with a giant head kick over Gregor Gillespie.
It felt fantastic to see him come back. He's the guy who we talked a lot about here on this podcast. We gave up on him a couple years ago. He had a fantastic run. Then he had a big death in his family, and he. You know, that 1% step back in those big fights will really hold you back. I'm not saying that he would have beat Tony Ferguson or he would have beat someone like Ally Aquinta. I always have trouble with his name. Ally Aquinta. I think he would have beat him if he had that extra step. That's one of the losses where I felt like that affected him. He made a game plan change. He said in the post-fight interview that he listened to Joe Rogan from when he was on the podcast about switching camps and doing things differently to go ahead and move forward. Still a very young guy, still a lot of potential. I still see a world champion when I see him.
Man, he's been so close with so many guys. You remember that Dos Anjos fight he had where he was winning early, but he just couldn't keep the gas tank going.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting tapped out. Kevin Lee is got to be one of my favorite guys at 155 pounds. I'm glad he's back at 155. I think that's the right move as well. Yeah. I think there's a way better weight class for him. Gregor's super tough. Gregor is one of the best NCAA wrestlers of his era, four-time All-American. I mean, I love watching Gregor fight. But it was really, really nice to see Kevin pick up this win. His striking looked great. The change of camps, I think he's probably finally hitting that groove. When I look at guys that I would like for him to fight, man, I think like a Kevin Lee, Donald Cerrone might be called for if Cerrone doesn't get the McGregor fight. I know it's obviously a step down for Donald, but I mean, he'll fight anybody. And man, Dan Hooker's around, Justin Gaethje's around. There's a lot of good options for him.
Dan Hooker would be a great fight.
Dan Hooker would be a great fight, right?
Especially because he just beat the guy who beat him.
Who did he beat that beat him?
Al Iaquinta.
Oh, he did beat Al. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, great point. Derek Lewis picked up a win over Blagoy Ivanov. Any thoughts?
His name is Blagoy.
I know.
That's such a tough name. Man, talk about bad motherfucker BMF. That guy has stab wounds all over his body. I don't know what happened in that guy's life, Blagoy. But man, that is a...
He's been through some shit, right?
That is a bad motherfucker, yeah.
Blagoy's had some bad times. Derek Lewis also with the big badass knockout king chest tattoo. And just getting up out of bad positions. There's little technical things that aren't happening, but mostly it's just like... Yeah, he's like a... It's like trying to hold down a Corey Anderson did a lot to make his case for a title shot at 205 pounds. He picked up the first round knockout win over probably the hottest prospect in the division, Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker has been killing everybody. Corey Anderson came in this week super pissed off, telling everybody how he deserved the title shot and he was going to prove it and this, that, and the other. Well, that's a great way to help your case, is to go out and knock out Johnny Walker in the first round. And that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, there was no point where Johnny felt comfortable. It was just an onslaught. It was a slaughter. It kind of made you think of, where was the Johnny Walker that we've seen in the past? Was it a case of him stepping up too fast in talent? Or is it a case that he still hasn't recuperated from that injury?
Man, I just think he got hit with a great right hand. And, you know, he kind of keeps his hands low and he's always moving his head. And I think that he might prove to be kind of a hittable guy. You know, just because he didn't get tagged in his first couple, it's always been a technical error that he's been making and he's gotten away with. He didn't get away with it this time. That was my read on it. Which is going to be an experience tool, right? It's going to be a learning tool. Your tricks might not always work at this level. Sometimes it's going to be those fundamentals.
Yeah. I was always a Corey Anderson fan. I thought he was going to get lost in the shuffle as a gatekeeper. He has kind of a plain Jane kind of look. He had a very stupid name. I like the fact they call himself Overtime now instead of 25-8, which I get what he means, but it went over people's heads. Overtime makes a lot more sense.
It's way better, right? Corey Overtime Anderson, way better. Does he get the title shot? Him or Reyes? It's got to be him or Reyes. I think Corey Anderson. Give me Corey Anderson and give me one more on Dominic.
Yeah.
You know, because beating, you know, the guys that Corey has beaten consistently for so many years, and he came out and he said, if you don't give me the title shot, fire me. That's a good story.
That's a good story.
Man, that's kind of it for
How do you think he does in a title shot against...
Not great. I think he's going to get... I think he would get worked out.
Could we put him up against... What was the name of that Brazilian dude with the hammer tattoo in his chest?
Thiago Santos?
Yeah, can we give him a Thiago Santos...
Well, Santos is all fucked up with his knee.
Right? I think that'd be a good tester. Like, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, but why are we going to filter out possible contenders from John Jones right now? You know, John should be fighting all the time, but he just doesn't have anyone to fight. That's never happened before with a world champion. It's never happened that the world champion is just waiting around for anybody to prove that they deserve a title shot. I think when anybody kind of sniffs close enough, go with it. Why fight it? Let's look ahead this week. UFC in Russia, 145-pound fight. Zabit is... Zabit something. Khabib Nurmagomedov is taking on Calvin Kattar. This is a really, really good striking battle between two elite guys at 145. I think that they're both on the outside looking into like the premium guys, you know, the very top of the division, but they're both right in that like lower top 10 range. People are very high on Zabit. From what I understand, Zabit is asked to change from a 5-round to a 3-round contest. I think Zabit takes a lot of Zabit is very careful with his matches. You know what I mean? He's not a BMF in that way, but he's still a bad man. What do you think is going to happen?
I'm a huge fan of Calvin Kattar. I saw him against the touchy-feely guy. I saw that fight. I saw him beat against Ricardo Lamas. A little bit older, but still, it showed a lot of skill, a lot of talent. He showed that he was going to be a real big problem in this weight class. Zabit is pretty. I'm a big fan of his style of fighting. It's a very pretty style. It's very Instagram-friendly. He's got the win over Jeremy Stephens. He passed that with flying colors.
It's amazing that he's ranked so high, though. I mean, I get he's 17-1, but they have him ranked 5th over guys who are out in these streets like Yair, like Chan Sung Jung, like Moicano. You know, there's a lot of guys in here that I would rank ahead of Zabit or Magomed Sharipov for the UFC rankings.
You crushed that last name. I was
Magomed Sharipov?
Yeah.
Thank you. I watch a lot of Russian wrestling.
I watch a lot of Russian porn. I still didn't get it. But no, it's you know what? I think this is a fight that is really going to prove if he's ready for the next level Zabit. Because to be honest, even though he's the favorite going into this fight, it's in Russia. It's in his home country. He has a very pretty style. He has less losses. I feel like Calvin Kattar has the skills to beat him, and I think he's going to pull the upset.
I actually agree. I was going to be my hot take as well. Calvin Kattar, I think, has a really refined striking style. I love the way this guy fights. I agree with you. I'm going to back Calvin Kattar for the upset.
Just the eye test. Like, I get the name is bigger. I get the hype is bigger. But if I do the eye test and I've seen their fights, I see what Calvin Kattar brings can expose the weaknesses that Zabit has.
I agree. Zabit had a lot of problems with Jeremy.
Yeah.
He had more problems with Jeremy Stephens than most guys end up having. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's a lot of guys who kind of passed that test cleanly, and Zabit, I don't think, was one of them.
No.
He really struggled.
That goes back to a lot of the flaws. A lot of the flaws that create that pretty style that he has is what Jeremy Stephens exposed. And if you think of Calvin Kattar's style, he has a lot of tools to be able to expose that possibly better than Jeremy did.
I agree. Co-main event, stepping in on short notice. Alexander Volkov is taking on the fill-in Greg Hardy, the villain fill-in. Greg Hardy is coming off of that no contest from Boston. It was really weird with the thing. And now he's turning it around. There's no rules in Russia, which is a good thing.
You made like a pantomime of something.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's fair. This is an audio format. So, yeah, he had the inhaler that he took between rounds 2 and 3 when he was gassing out. And because of that, that's illegal. So the commission moved the win that he had, the decision win, to a no contest. People question, like, does that, you know, should it have been a disqualification? Should it have been a no contest? I think no contest was the right way to go. He looked pretty good in that fight. His defense, like, his defensive capabilities looked way better against Sassoni, homeboy Sassoni. But I think Volkov is another level. Volkov is... I think this is going to be a replay of the Derek Lewis versus Volkov fight, but I don't think that Hardy is going to have the wherewithal to pick up that late knockout.
There's a lamb being brought to the slaughter. They're going to feast. Basically, you know how, if you think of like when Vikings were around, they used to have like that sacrificial lamb they used to give to Odin. If you think of Russia being descendants of the Vikings, you have Volkov there.
Which they are not.
The Rus. The Rus are Vikings. Russia...
I think the Vikings are more like Nordic.
Correct. But coming across those seas came the Viking and they impregnated the Russian people, the regular Russian
You know the
people.
Show Vikings isn't actually like real history, right?
Rus literally means Viking. The country's named after the Rus, which is Viking, Russia.
Jesse, the show Vikings was lying to you about your history lesson here.
But yeah, so you have this big Viking descendant getting a sacrifice in front of all this Russian audience for them to view and see him feast. That's what we're going to see. We're going to see a lot of blood. We're going to see a lot of violence, and we're going to see Volkov take the victory.
I think we're going to see Volkov take the victory, but I am very nervous that Greg Hardy is going to be able to pick up an early knockout win. That's a real possibility, right? Volkov has been knocked out before by big heavy hitters.
By the way, I have to say this, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Greg Hardy's not been a good guy in the past. I've heard that ever since he's gotten...
For what exactly
for
was
beating
he...
beating the shit out of his ex-girlfriend when he was a football player.
There you go.
But I've heard that ever since he's gotten to MMA, he's changed as a person. They've taught him respect. Like, he's learned respect through, like, basically being humbled in the gyms. And, like, now he's actually, like, a cool guy from what I heard. Where do we go in terms of, like, forgiveness for people like that? Because can you define his entire life on who he was when he was younger?
He hasn't ever apologized for it, and there's no one telling me he's cool now that isn't making money off of him. So, and the fact that he keeps fouling people and getting disqualified for illegal shit in MMA, and every single time he has a fight, there's some drama where he feels entitled to being outside of the consequences. No, I don't think so.
So you think it's the same old guy, it's just going to tell over time?
Yes. I think it's telling already. I think anybody who's watching has seen that this guy's a huge asshole. Right?
Yeah.
There a fight where he hasn't acted like a huge asshole?
When he's getting pressured and he's losing, he's going immediately to cheat.
Yes. And I think that's going to happen in this fight as well. Yeah. And the Russians will murder him. It is a bad idea to have Greg Hardy fight a Russian guy in Russia, because he will try to cheat and they will kill him ISIS style. Russia is white ISIS, okay? We need to come to terms with that. There's a couple other good fights from the UFC Russia card. It'll be decent action and a bunch of guys with a ton of vowels in their name. If you thought Al Iaquinta was a problem, then some of these guys, Tadiev Emiev, is going to really throw you for a loop. Man, World Boxing Super Series, we talked about it last week, but let's just refresh on it. Turns out... Inoue versus Donaire, World Boxing Super Series, Thursday.
This Thursday at 8 a.m., a lot of people will be at work at the time period that this fight actually happens, but it's going to be fantastic. Coming from the Sataya Superdome in Japan, we have the monster.
The what Superdome? Saitama.
Saitama Superdome. I knew I said it wrong. I knew it was going to fall down on me. Sorry. I had such rhythm going to it. We have the monster Inoue, the three-division world champion, going to dominate another weight class, World Boxing Super Series style, ready to make his world transition to be an international star against the former pound-for-pound king from the Philippines, Nonito Donaire. He's still in there. What's your shots? What do you give the former pound-for-pound king's chances against a guy who many people consider a pound-for-pound top 10 at least?
What are his chances? His chances are real bad. How high do you think, in a way, his pound-for-pound ceiling is?
I think he could be number one.
I think he could be number one, right? He has just been murdering everybody.
If he's not top five, he's got to be top 10. And if he's not in your top 10, you just don't know shit about
boxing. Yeah, it's not correct. Yeah, he has just been crushing everybody. So I'm excited to see it.
I'm excited to see it. I got Donaire winning by fluke victory. It's been hilarious.
Bet on it. Put money on it. Talk is cheap.
The way he's been jumping in this tournament has been insane. He was supposed to be eliminated in the first round. Then he made that round, upsetting a young, hungry Ryan Burnett. Then after that, the guy he's supposed to fight, who's supposed to destroy him, gets injured. He beats the late replacement.
It's been a Cinderella story. I mean, it's just been like... There was some Australian, like, speed skater who won an Olympic gold medal because literally everybody else in the race fell down. And they asked him about it afterwards. They're like, man, does this, like, cheapen it for you? Like, you were in last place and, you know, you won this because literally every other person fell down. He's like, no, because I should have won, like, 3 world championships, but I got cheated in all of them. And so, I'm going to take this, you know? We'll call it even. And that's kind of how I feel about, like, you know, Donaire, who maybe should have had bigger fights than he got. You know, it's like, yeah, you're going to get knocked out for a lot of money. You knew what you were getting into.
Yeah, but if he wins, it'll be fucking
amazing. It'll be, like, one of the best boxing stories of the year.
Yeah.
Do you have anything?
I cannot wait to see it. if Inoue wins, does he stay in the weight class? Does he move up? What do you do? Because he's a small guy who's been moving up many weight classes.
I think he kind of has to go money weight.
Yeah.
And when you hit that hard, it's, you know, it's easier to do that.
And he's right? So fast, and he's carried it up all those weight classes.
Eventually, it's going to turn into like a Mikey Garcia stopping point about like, oh no, that is too big. But
he's gone up four, and he's only has like 10 fights.
His last fight, he knocked out that guy in like, you know, people thought he had plaster of Paris in his wraps. He was hitting that guy so hard.
He's so accurate as well with his combination and his punches. Like, the guy's amazing.
We're so wet. We're just sitting here just talking about how good this dude is at boxing. Do you have anything else for the week, Jesse?
Nope, that's it.
Let people know how to get a hold of you.
Follow me on social media, Jay Rivas and Jay Rivas Comedy on Facebook.
Follow me on Instagram, Joseph M. Gilpin. Follow me on Twitter, @BadTweetus. And like and subscribe to the show. And we will be back next week here on the Fighter's Block.